First, for the record, we've invited all of the Senate members, and
they all showed up.
Some of the masters.
I'm going to call the House Transportation Committee to order, seeing how we don't have a big crowd. We can get this done and get out of here and go home early. So with that, thank you that have showed up, you loyal people that have showed up here. We really appreciate having someone to look at anyway. And with that, I'm going to open the public hearing on House Bill 2001. And I'm going to go ahead and call up John Chandler and Bob Stacy and Art Schlack. Is there anyone else in this group that...
It's like putting two north ends of a magnet together.
You both put Luna to the side.
Gentlemen, welcome, and you have a proposal.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Stacy, Executive Director of 1000 Friends of Oregon. Those assembled before you have a progress report on the content of one provision, which has been much discussed, but slow to be drafted in the legislative process. It is the planning provision that I testified about when you held hearings on the transportation package known as the Jobs and Transportation Act. As you continue deliberations on House Bill 2001, we are seeking an amendment to incorporate these provisions into that package. After 1000 Friends of Oregon, the Oregon Environmental Council, the Oregon Truck Association, and AAA went through a process of coming up with language reflecting the concept of metropolitan planning for greenhouse gas reduction as our communities grow. We attracted the interest and active engagement of the League of Cities, the Association of Counties, and the Home Builders in the language that resulted. John Chandler, in particular, is a very persuasive and effective communicator, which caused us to go back and look again at some of the language to ensure that we had it right. What you have before you represents work done cumulatively by Mr. Chandler and me, starting with the draft that had been assembled by the first mentioned group, including the truckers and the automobile club representatives. What we have now is a significantly changed and downscaled planning policy statement. It applies to three areas of the state: to the Portland metropolitan area, specifically the area within Metro, to the Salem-Keizer area, specifically the area within the Metropolitan Planning Organization boundaries, the cities of Salem and Keizer, their urban growth boundary, those portions of the counties included in the MPO, the Metropolitan Planning Organization. And third, the Eugene-Springfield metropolitan area, that is the Central Lane Metropolitan Planning Organization. In each of these areas, the so-called MPO, this is a creature of federal planning law, prepares a land use and transportation scenario looking to the future year 2035 to develop a strategy by which growth can be planned in a way that minimizes greenhouse gas emissions from transportation, that is specifically from cars and light trucks. This affects the planning requirements and responsibilities only of the cities within those jurisdictions, not of nearby cities nor of the counties near the MPOs. So it's dramatically reduced in scale from the original version, which we urged the committee to look at as part of the earlier Bill 2120. We have worked through a lot of details. I think there's still some to be discussed. I submit that this is close enough that the Legislative Council Office could begin to work on drafting amendments that would enable the committee, with the earnest assistance of those of us assembled in front of you, to continue to work the process. And I'm going to stop there, allow my colleagues to say their piece, and then would be happy to respond to questions.
Thank you. You're next.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, John Chandler for the Oregon Home Builders Association. As Mr. Stacy indicated, we've had a robust discussion about this particular section of House Bill 2001. When it started out, we were in 2120. And the work in front of you, the draft that you're looking at, is one that we will support and believe actually accomplishes the purposes of Mr. Stacy and the work group initially brought forward. And just before the record, I want to state for the committee's benefit that our involvement with this was never based upon any objection to the ideas underlying planning for climate change to address the impacts of climate change. My association has passed a resolution stating that the Oregon home builders are going to be a leader in the nation in green building, sustainable development. Our national association has funded one study, which was with the participation of one of the members of this body prior to being a member of the body, looking at the literature on the connection between land use planning and climate change. They're now moving into, National Home Builders, moving into phase two of that same study, looking at even more digging down into detail on those the exact things this bill is aiming to address. And as a matter of fact, earlier this morning, I signed an amicus brief where the National Home Builders and the Oregon Home Builders are challenging an action of the City of Eugene downzoning apartment houses, the density close to the University of Oregon, on the basis of its impact on climate change.
Oh, violation. Not suing people.
It was an appeal. Bob is not really suing people. It's an appeal. And a darn well-founded one at that. The point being, aside from the gratuitous smack at the City of Eugene, is that we believe in the issue, we understand the significance of it, and our involvement was aimed at trying to make the process work in a way that we feel would actually provide credible outcomes and a process at the local government level that would result in good planning, economically sound planning, and a better basis for going forward. We support this. Obviously, LC hasn't had its shot at it yet. We'll reserve the right to quibble about some of the details when LC gets done, but as a concept, assuming that what you get back looks substantially like this, we will be in support of this and of the entire package. Be glad to take any questions at the end.
Thank you.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, my name is Art Slack. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. And we, too, are supportive of the concept that is embodied within the draft of Section 18. We recognize the need to do additional work with regard to the nexus between land use and transportation, and also the efforts to address the reduction in carbon at this point. That being said, we have expressed a number of concerns that the redrafting of this section has tried to address. The number of MPOs has been reduced from 6 in the original concept to 3. We are talking here about some phasing, which we think is extremely important. But we would note that the dates that are in this piece of legislation are, shall we say, optimistic at best. And that's something that we're going to have to watch. Would also note at this point that there are a couple of touch points that would provide the opportunity if things are not going, shall we say, as planned or as hoped in terms of the work that would be done by the MPOs. The first one would be in the metro region, that there will be an opportunity to come back and talk to the legislature about concerns and timing issues that may at this point necessitate some changes in the legislation, or the, if this was to be put in the statute in the package. So that continues to be at least a concern we have. The other concern that I've expressed, and Mr. Stacy has also assured me that revenue would be forthcoming to undertake the tasks and the requirements of this piece of legislation, not only by local government, but by also by other state agencies, because I would note there is the Department of Land Conservation and Development, there's the Oregon Department of Transportation, there's the Department of Energy, there's DEQ. They're all identified as participating, either providing information or other kinds of things that would be necessary for this program to be undertaken. We are concerned, the Association of Oregon Counties is concerned, that funding, specific funding, is identified. And I spoke to that today when I testified to Ways and Means subcommittee dealing with transportation, that we currently have two pots, if you will, or two forms of grants to local government. One is the Transportation Growth Management Program that is a joint program between DLCD and ODOT. There are currently, I think that program is at about $8 million of federal flexible dollars. But these dollars are basically oversubscribed now for work that is done by cities and counties dealing with land use and transportation kinds of issues. And one of those that is a primary consideration for us is the transportation system plans that I would suggest has been the nexus between land use and transportation. And it's the program that I see that is would be key to looking at the least cost planning kinds of considerations that we're going to be faced with as a result of looking at the things in the transportation plan and also at the federal level. So I am concerned if any of those dollars would be, shall we say, tapped for this project. Also, the Land Conservation and Development Commission and the department has had very limited grant dollars available to it historically. And it appears from looking at their budget and that those grant dollars will probably be reduced during this next biennium, unfortunately. And so, again, we're concerned that those dollars not be, considered for this activity. The point then, Chair Beyer, is that we believe that if this work is to be undertaken, that there needs to be a line item budget allocation in the Department of Transportation budget with funds that would be used to undertake this work either by the MPOs, by the state agencies, and by, to the extent local government needs to be involved in the first biennium. And if that's not forthcoming or the legislature chooses not to do this, then that's another matter at this point. But if we can deal with those issues, we can deal with the funding issues, we can deal with the timing issues, then this is a concept that I think has merit. So with those kind of concerns on the table, I think this has merit at this point.
Thank you. And Craig, my apologies for not
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Craig Honeyman, League of Oregon Cities. As I previously testified when you first held a hearing on House Bill 2120, the League believes that this legislation needs to be as green as possible. It needs to address the issue of greenhouse gas emissions. There's no question about that. Having said that, I can report to you that there are cities in my membership who have struggled from time to time with the nexus of land use and transportation planning and the transportation planning rule, but we're working through that. In the interest of time, I would, associate myself with Mr. Schlack's remarks with regard to funding and our concern, the League's concern, that what I would characterize as traditional or longer-standing types of transportation planning initiatives not be undercut or result in a lack of funding for those kind of programs. One city concern that we had previously with prior drafts that we think is substantially addressed in Mr. Stacey's new draft is actually subsection 7 of section 18, but the very last sentence of the proposal discusses a recommendation that would be forthcoming in subsequent reports to the legislature from Land Conservation and Development Department and ODOT regarding whether additional areas or cities located outside the boundaries of the three MPOs that are currently in this document should be considered for inclusion in planning as a result of determinations of significant contributions of commuting trips to the actual MPO. The prior language was, in my estimation, more prescriptive than this is. There may still be concern that this is a first step towards cities who are currently not within an MPO, coming into an MPO. That may cause concern down the road, but this is, I guess, a more lenient or long-term way of looking at it. So our concerns are reasonably addressed.
Thank you. And I saw his first, then Schaffler and Bailey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Having watched this a bit through the process, and being a rabid supporter of the idea behind this, I'd like to say that I do think that this, what we've gotten to, is better for the process. I've said that to you, Bob, offline, and you, John, as well, and now I'm saying for the record that I think that while this is scaled back, most assuredly, what we have here is a very clear plan. And I think, as complicated as these issues are, that you guys have on two pages come up with something that is actionable on seriously reducing greenhouse gas emissions and combating global climate change in a very significant way is a major accomplishment. And I just wanted to make sure that I got out there a bunch of praise on the record first before anything else happened. because
no further comment.
Yeah. So that's the first thing I want to say. And then the second thing I want to say is I'd like for you guys, if you could, talk a little bit about you know, I've supported this from the beginning because I believe we need to deal with climate policy immediately. And transportation is one of the quickest, most efficient ways to get at this problem. But I also support this because I think that climate policy is actually a pretty good proxy for least cost planning. I think that it makes us take into account expanding capacity on our roadways by not creating new roadways, by trying to look at other modes of transportation and open up our highway system. And in so doing, not creating a decade's worth of new maintenance and preservation projects by expanding our highway system, but rather keeping our highway system as close as possible to what it is now, because we can hardly maintain it as it exists. I mean, we can't maintain it as it currently exists. And that, to me, is one of the added benefits, is that the climate change discussion is actually a proxy for being really cost-effective in how we plan moving into the future. And I'd like to get that on the record and get some of your guys' insights onto that. I know, Mr. Chandler, you probably have something to say on that because you're a smart guy, and I think it's a pretty smart idea. So if I do say so myself.
Madam Chair, Representative Call, I don't just necessarily disagree with what you said, although I'd want to make sure that, for the record, I'm not necessarily supportive of not building new roads.
And neither am I. I just want to be able to pay for them.
The funding piece, which is in other sections of this bill, I suspect, or I certainly hope it is, I've only been focusing on Section 18, so heaven only knows from my standpoint what's in the other 17 or afterwards. I think what we're trying to get at here is really a more thoughtful approach to how transportation planning and urban design work together. Mr. Stacey and I have had this discussion for many years on other topics, and we don't agree necessarily on what conclusions can be drawn. This bill, I think, is structured in such a way that the conclusions aren't necessarily presumed one way or the other, but that the process is set out of which can come results that will be what they will be. And I think the flaw in earlier efforts has been less focus on the results and more on the process. This, I think, is aiming more at trying to get to a result at the end. It may not be anything that Mr. Stacey or I or frankly you, Representative, would have anticipated at the outset, but because we've structured, I think, in a way that doesn't put an undue burden on any of the participants in it and doesn't rely on pie-in-the-sky assumptions, and I don't mean that disparagingly. I think all assumptions have that are unfounded. I think we have a much better chance at working our way to a future where we don't have to rely as much on automobiles and can reduce greenhouse gases in that fashion. I will state, however, that I don't know if Mr. Stacey will agree with this, and I'll find out here in a minute. The land use component of the greenhouse gas piece of the transportation is not as large as you're going to find in other areas potentially. It doesn't mean you ignore it. It means you work on it. It has other benefits as well from a community standpoint, certainly, and from an infrastructure cost standpoint, as you pointed out. I think it's important, and we've talked about this, it's going to be a problem in the future, to make sure that when we go to divvy up what piece of which of the problem gets tackled by which method, that we don't try to do the entire thing on the land use side, as far as transportation is concerned, but to isolate out the piece that is susceptible to being addressed by land use planning and by different community design.
Madam Chair, very briefly, Bob Stacey, Representative Call, I would underscore one point that Mr. Chandler makes. This is not a single prescription of a single outcome. Not only are there three different communities or metropolitan areas described here, but the language identifies the fact that there are different ways to skin this cat. So there are multiple scenarios that the Metropolitan Planning Organization or Metro would produce, showing all the options on the table. Compact development, less compact development, more highways, more transit, different combinations, and then communities decide which of those scenarios for future growth fit community values as well as hitting the greenhouse gas reduction target. A couple of housekeeping matters that I should have spoken to in my initial comments, Madam Chair. This is designated Section 18 simply because that was a section in House Bill 2120 that the interest groups were looking at as the amendment point. It bears no relationship to 2001's numbering system. This is a new section. And similarly, there's a cross-reference to the former Section 15 of House Bill 2120 that's intended to get to Mr. Schlack's point that there should be a funding opportunity. And the one that was identified by us is the federal flexible funds that are made potentially available to some extent by the package. That is, in addition to the funds that Mr. Schlack talked about that are now being allocated for planning by ODOT for transportation and growth management, there would be an additional component for the planning contemplated here. We've been in touch with Metro, which would have the initial responsibility under this act to go first with this scenario planning, about what it would cost them in the upcoming biennium. And their ballpark estimate hovers around $500,000. As Mr. Schlack points out, there would be resources necessary for technical support from a couple of state agencies mentioned here. But we're talking about a million-dollar estimate in terms of the transfer of federal flexible funds that are part of the department's budget today into this activity. But we agree that it does need to be directly addressed as a priority and as a called out item. It doesn't add to the fiscal impact of the measure.
Thank you, Representative Schaffler.
Well, you know, transportation and land use are linked together. No denying that. I've been in public service since 1996 on City Council, Planning Commission, Sunrise Water Authority. Budget Committee. I was alternate to Carl Rohde on JPAC for 3 years, and I've been in this building for 7 years. And I've learned a little history. You know, Senate Bill 10, you know, Comprehensive Plan goals, Senate Bill 100, which led to horrible Measure 37, and be quite frank with you, I don't think, and I was the deciding vote to put Measure 49 on the ballot. None of us are happy with what we have. No one's happy with what we have. And now we're going to add this. I tell you, I am not supportive of this right now, and I'll tell you why. We can do this now. We can plan our road system now to fight greenhouse gas and get people out of their cars and onto bicycles and walk. We can do it now. Matter of fact, I would argue we have been doing it for some time, and that's a good thing. And then one other thing, shape and develop. No, this is not a plan. This is a plan to make a plan. And to shape and develop modeling and other capabilities needed to perform the planning functions, two or more alternative land use transportation scenarios. And where in here does it say that the legislature is going to approve these plans and scenarios? I'm just not going to hand this over to Metro or anyone else. I'm not going to, because I don't trust them. I don't trust anybody. And living, working in this building for 7 years, if you still trust people with something this substantial, you are the most naive human being on the planet. Now, I am reluctant to even consider supporting this. So I'm one guy, but I had to get it out there. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Schaffler. My apologies. I was a little lax about calling people by their, not by their title. So my apologies to everybody.
That's okay, Byer. I love you.
Thanks. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me see if I can describe what I'm hearing here, and then you tell me where I'm getting this wrong. With deference to my colleague, it does look to me like a plan to make a plan. And in some sense, I think that that's a good thing, and perhaps what we are trying to do here. And that the idea is, to paraphrase Mr. Stacey, that we are not looking to define outcomes necessarily, but to measure outcomes and to manage outcomes through that process. And whether that's, and the question is not more roads or less roads, the question is roads in the right places for the right reasons. And that there is a complex interrelationship between land use and transportation, livability, between quality of life, however you want to define it, economic development. And that as it stands now, it's very difficult to integrate that into our current planning process because it's hard to wrap our arms around. And, Madam Chair, for full disclosure, the legislator who formerly wrote the report, that was me, was a little bit of a history with working with the National Association of Home Builders. But in working on that report with my colleagues, one of the things that we looked at in the literature was how do you define sprawl? How do you define the connection between housing and greenhouse gas and transportation? And what the literature shows, it's very, very difficult. It's very hard, and that the tools don't really exist to do that efficiently now. And while we can plan for greenhouse gas and roads today in our planning process, we aren't necessarily measuring all the variables and all the outcomes in that process and getting to the most efficient solution. That's my perception of what this is trying to accomplish, is to create a process to do that integrated planning, to consider more than we've considered in the past, and to make sure that we're getting it right. Where am I wrong?
Madam Chair, Representative Bailey, you're more eloquent than I in terms of describing how this would work. The idea that we can try to get a measuring stick that anticipates how clean cars are going to be 20 years out, that gives us credit for those advances in technology, and then tries to figure out smart ways of closing the gap while we build our communities is what's behind this, to have a measuring stick for the planning that, as Representative Schaffler rightly says, we have done and have done well in this state despite our discomfort with some of those processes. We are leading the nation in terms of talking about these issues, in terms of having a planning process to address them. We haven't really set up a measuring process to see how we're doing when it comes to greenhouse gas reduction. Is there a way we can maximize that outcome at the same time we're building great places and providing a balanced transportation system? The goal here is to let communities have a picture of 1, 2, 3 ways the community might grow and hit that target while integrating jobs, housing, the transportation network that ties them together. The model sounds mysterious. I don't think it is mysterious. The folks at Metro have been using it. The folks in a number of other communities around the country have looked at what Metro has done since the mid-90s in terms of using land use and transportation models to give information to local planners. If we set a benchmark about greenhouse gases in that process and we share technology with the other metropolitan areas of 200,000 or more, Eugene and Eugene, Springfield, and Salem, we have the opportunity to try to make that process work well, to give planners and community leaders and community citizens more information about ways of hitting a target that most of us think is pretty important as we grow. reducing our greenhouse gas footprint. Thanks.
And if I may, Madam Chair, to respond both to Representative Schaaf and Representative Bailey, part of the reason that we're very supportive of this approach is that it protects the development industry from the one of the flaws, what I believe is a flaw anyway, of the transportation planning rule, which tended to make the site-by-site process more important than the planning process. There's language in here, for example, that says this isn't to be used as part of the development approval, as part of the criteria for a land use action or anything else. And Mr. Stacey and I discussed this at some length, but from our standpoint, from the development community standpoint, we've seen this in other jurisdictions around the country where a decision was made at the local government level to fight greenhouse gases, and they did so by telling developers, when you bring your project in, tell us how this reduces greenhouse gases. We thought that was cheating, and we wanted to make sure that did not get replicated here. Not only was it not cricket, it probably didn't do much. It's impossible in most cases on a site-by-site basis to have much of an effect. It has to be done at the planning level. The other thing we wanted to make clear in here was that it isn't aimed at any particular target because so much of what this involves is you can create the circumstances under which people could walk, bike, take a llama trail, what have you. You can't make them do it. And I remember some years back at a metro function where they had the pointy-clicky choice thing on transportation planning. It was back in the early days of the Metro 2040 plan, probably 2040, probably 1840. And the question on the board to be pointy-clicked at was, why don't you ride your bike to work? And the questions, the answers that you could pick from were things like no bicycle parking, no bike lanes, no showers, so on. And a friend of mine that I was with raised his hand and said, where's too fat and lazy?
Or stopping at every stop sign, Madam Chair.
Which is, after all, the primary reason. I think the setup here allows us to create communities where people can make the choice to do any even number of transportation options. It won't require. And the measurement is going to, at some point, and Mr. Stacey and I have discussed this, we didn't put anything in the bill, and we probably don't agree on how you do this, will be, as with the transportation planning rule, there's some form of deeming language at some point that says, if you do these several things, then you can assume these other outcomes in the absence of a measurement device. I'm getting ahead of the process, and I don't want to presuppose. My assumption going into this is, we can create communities where more choices exist than we can do now. We know for a fact how to build communities that are unwalkable and unbikeable. We're not as good yet at getting communities that we know are simply because of that human behavior factor. But we also can do a lot more than we have done under the TPR because we can set up a different process and a more experimental process using what Metro's already doing, what other communities can do as a form of experiment, frankly, and learn from that as we go forward.
Representative Bailey had another question?
Oh, no, Madam Chair.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess I did. After Representative Schaffler's comments about cities could do this, cities and counties could do this now, if they so choose to. Counties probably would be a little harder to get to because of all the cities in a county. But why do you think that nobody has even considered this at this point, or has anybody considered it, I guess? Is it lack of interest, or is it a funding issue?
Chair Beyer, I think part of it is a funding issue. I think part of it is the fact that we have been fixed on the land use plan and a vehicular transportation system that would implement that plan. And we haven't had funding at the transportation level to actually do that, let alone think about a lot of options. One of the, deficiencies we've had in the land use and transportation plan is the nexus. And even though we've been doing transportation system plans for, I'll say, 15, 20 years at this point, the focus of those has been basically not looking at alternatives to move people around in the relationship between and transportation and land use. It has been more on the road system that we're going to build to implement that and how can we provide additional capacity and what kind of new facilities we need to move freight and people, primarily on the road system. We could have been looking at more options through the transportation system plans, but we have not done that for a variety of reasons. I think what this does, plus the least cost planning, it focuses new lights to give it, to talk about the relationship. And one of the things that I hope that comes out of this, as much as anything, is educational tools so that we can talk, so that whether it's the MPOs or whether it's the local governments talking to the citizens about the options that are there, so that they are better educated in terms of the options that they have available, not only in terms of just the transportation system, but also the land use system at this point. Because we're looking at higher densities, we're looking at compact development, and it changes people's lifestyle as a result of that. And they have to buy into this. And maybe the, if you want to call it, the in quotes, greenhouse gas and the reduction in global warming is something that will stir people to take a look creatively at other options at this point that will help benefit this. So that's one of the things that I, you know, that I see that will come out of this. Doing it in the three MPOs initially, I think, is the best use of the funds. The other areas of that are not as well populated, we have the transportation system plans, and you can look at a lot of these same issues in that format. And where we have, you know, smaller cities, counties, where we're gonna, and that we have those tools that we can look at a lot of these same issues. But I don't think the focus and the spotlight will be as great unless we have something similar to what's in this concept for the urban areas.
If I might, Madam Chair, to your question, too, I think one of the issues that this body can help the most with in terms of the local governments is not only a guaranteed source of funding, I absolutely support their request there. This can't be something, and I realize you can't buy in future legislatures. Many of you will be in those future legislatures, however, and I would hope that this doesn't become something that gets funded, then not funded, or reduced, and then funded more and all that. It has to be something they can rely on, because this is an additional bit of work that they don't currently have resources for. But the other thing that this legislature can do, or this body can do, is provide some political cover for very difficult decisions at the local level. A big part of the reason that this hasn't been done already, as former Governor Kitzhaber stated, that two things Oregonians hate, one is sprawl, the other is density. it is very hard to do this. When we were fighting about the transportation planning rule many years ago, the issue was, for example, cul-de-sacs, where the TPR said you couldn't do cul-de-sacs, they wanted connecting streets, and they wanted certain street widths, and so on and so on. And we had several running gun battles with jurisdictions around Oregon. We finally went to LCDC and said, here's the plans we submitted that had your connecting streets and didn't have cul-de-sacs, and here's the local governments that would not approve those plans because the citizens of the communities didn't want those plans. So you have to have both local will, local money, local initiative, and enough political cover, be it from LCDC or by this body or from ODOT or someone, to give the local elected officials the room to work, because this is going to result in changes at the local level that are not going to be easy to accommodate all the time. They might be very beneficial, but as a species, we tend not to like change all that well, and it tends to be threatening. And a part of this whole effort has to be to create the environment, not just in the planning process, but the political process, where those changes can occur in a way that doesn't cause our citizenry to reject the objectives of the planning in the first place.
And I'm probably going to let you go. I think one of the concerns is that by, you know, giving this, you know, to Metro, letting them run with it first, and no, I mean, there are some look back provisions for the legislature to look at this and possibly change it, but there really, besides that, there isn't, you know, it puts Metro kind of in an, I would think for them, a little bit of an awkward position, in that they're taking the lead and they're kind of directing how the rest of the MPOs are going to be going around the state to a certain extent. They're, you know, they're walking the trail first and setting the trail up. And it is, in my way of thinking, I'm not even sure it's a position that they're going to want to be in, and not because of the policy so much as the political aspects of this. So,
I don't see him in the building asking me for this. I know that. So, two things. I mean, we're controlling the purse strings. That's one way of control. But I would like some kind of biennium oversight of this legislature. That those two things will bring me some peace. I'm not saying I'm voting for it yet, but I'm not just going to hand this over to Metro. And you know what? They're not in the room. I don't see them knocking the door down and begging. They haven't called me and asked me to do this. So,
and to be just quickly, to be fair to Metro, they don't know. They really they're just now looking at the proposal and don't have an answer. So I just...
Madam Chair, one more thing.
Yes.
I don't think I'll ever run for cover under LCDC.
Representative Caldwell.
Yeah, I just a couple of things that I don't mean to... I mean, this is a public hearing. I don't mean to comment too wildly about things. There was discussion about who would go first. I mean, that was a serious question. And for me, I was like, we should go with the guys who were least furthest along and go in and do this. And that created a whole host of other problems that, talk about political cover. You go into communities that haven't been doing a lot of planning and you ram this down their throat, and that's a huge issue. And I got talked off of the ledge on that. And the wisdom of letting Metro go first is that they are furthest along. You know, we're going to be able to have tangible results. We're going to be able to model their behavior that they've been doing for a very long time and see how much of what they've already been doing works, and they're going to be able to move us further down the line. And I think Bob could probably speak better to this, but there was real conversations about where to begin, where do we start with, and Metro was the most logical choice simply because of how far along they were and that it would be the most cost-effective place to begin this process. And maybe, Bob, you can add a bit to that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think it's important to Representative Schaffer's point as well as Representative Call that Metro be viewed as going first, as Representative Call says, because they've been engaged in some work about 2035 planning over the last several months already. They've been using their land use and transportation models. They've actually been gathering some information about greenhouse gas emissions. It almost represents fine-tuning of what they're involved in. But they should be reporting back to this legislature, and this section contemplates reports in February 2011 to the 2011 Legislative Assembly and in February 2013 to the 2013 Legislative Assembly about progress to date. Those are points at which the legislature, should it not like what's happening, or that local governments, should they not like what's happening, will have an opportunity to reopen this discussion. Metro is asked not to take final action, but to develop scenarios prior to the 2011 session so that the scenarios themselves can be looked at by the Legislative Assembly before local governments are asked to respond to them.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative
Schaffer. Let me make it clear. I'm not interested in just a report. I want it saying the legislature will approve or disapprove, forcing us to take action. That's what I want to see, not a report. With all due respect.
Thank you.
Just a report.
I don't see any other questions for the panel.
Thank you.
Committee, we are have the pleasure of having Bill Bradbury here to talk to us. And unless there's another sign-up sheet, that's the only person I have signed up. So if somebody wants to sign up, check in over here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Bill Bradbury, citizen.
And a damn fine one, Madam Chair.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to have you here tonight.
I want to make a sort of a larger comment, which is In my terms in the legislature, I can remember the Transportation Committee most, not entirely, but mostly dealing with the, you know, how we're spending the gas tax and how money is being spent on highways and basically dealing with highway construction. And it's very clear to me that, and it's very exciting to me, that we now see the Transportation Committee. Well, obviously, the Transportation Committee dealt with a lot of other issues like bike paths and other things, too. But the primary focus has been on highway construction. And I find it very exciting to see that we're now to a place where we're really looking at a whole series of transportation alternatives, obviously including highways and maintaining highways, but also extending that to transit and bike and other efforts with land use planning to try to see that we could actually use roads less. I think you know I do presentations around the state. And I've been particularly focusing on high schools lately. I was at Minnville High School earlier today, speaking to the entire student body about global warming. It's just real clear that there's a pie out there that's about one-third transportation, one-third industry, and one-third buildings, and it varies from state to state what the actual percentages are. It's so critical that we actually really start to address the transportation impacts on global warming. And that's, I just get very excited to see that really being taken on here and really starting to be addressed. Because it's so clear to me that the longer we wait, the more difficult it's going to be to deal with this issue, so that if we really start to address it and do it in a way that's pretty, I mean, I wouldn't call it, it's certainly not painful, it's more painless, it's more voluntary, as we really start to move in that direction, I think it really helps us make a transition that we clearly have to make. 80% reduction in carbon by 2050 is not going to be easy, and this kind of effort really helps us start to move that ball forward. So I just really wanted to come and say I really am encouraged by this pretty comprehensive transportation package to really start to looking at addressing global warming and the transportation contribution to it. So that's what I'm here to say.
Well, thank you for coming and saying that. Any questions for Bill? Mr. Bradbury? No.
Okay.
Good
Thank
job.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And then a last minute entry here, Kay Van Cycle. Right?
Okay, thank you. Madam Chair, committee members, I apologize for my voice, but I notice that some others here have the same problem today, so I'm fighting to keep my voice. So I'll try to keep my presentation fairly brief as long as I have a voice here. So I'm here representing the... I'm Kay Van Sickle, okay. Yes, and I'm here representing the American Council of Engineering Companies of Oregon. We're the consulting firms that do the design of all kinds of transportation facilities. Clearly, we're very much in support of this funding package. We're very much supportive of the comprehensiveness of it because we're here to do the design work, whether it's highways, whether it's bridges, whether it's bike paths, whether it's transit, whatever. The consulting firms that are represented by ACEC Oregon are quite broad in their experience base and are very interested in a very comprehensive transportation funding package. We clearly are in support of this from the perspective of projects that can be delivered. projects that can be delivered in the way that the public can see that they are being delivered. So therefore, we're supportive of lists of projects that the public knows that they'll be getting out of this funding package. And of course, obviously, we are very much in support of the aspect of it in creating jobs, because that's what we're doing as consulting engineering firms, are providing jobs for those professional engineers. So we would be very interested in seeing this funding package put together where there could be a jump start of this effort so that the public can see very quickly that there is something coming that they can see happening. And then, of course, from the economic situation we're all dealing with, that the public sees that there's something happening there to the transportation infrastructure. So, again, fighting with this voice, I'm going to keep it brief. That's the heart of the message, I think, that ACEC Oregon is representing here. We, of course, would be interested in seeing that this package of projects would be outsourced, very much as OTIA 3 has been outsourced. I think in an early testimony I gave today, I talked about how the outsourcing process has worked much more effectively the last few years. And so I think that's where ACEC Oregon stands. So if you have questions, and I can keep my voice here, I'll be happy to try to answer them.
Thank you. Representative Schaffler, do you have a
question? Yes, Madam Chair. You were doing great with me until you said the word outsource.
Okay. Well, okay. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you.
Where are your comments?
Okay. Are there any other questions?
I'm not seeing any other questions.
Okay.
Thank you for coming.
Well, thank you, and thank you for letting me save my voice here.
And that was all that I had signed up for this evening. And thank everybody for coming. Again, it was nice to at least have some company in the room tonight. And I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2001, and I'm adjourning.